Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, so we're going to do something here that's... we'll get into some sports. We'll get into some Royals, obviously, and then we'll talk with Ryan Tracy coming up at noon. 1 o'clock, Mick Schaefer, we'll hang out with him. But we're going to do something here that before, I will preemptively say there's not going to be an easy segue. So we'll do this, and then we will segue back into the show. But Kansas City Radio and Kansas City got, you know, awful news today, and it isn't... It sucks that it's not surprising news because cancer is the worst of the worst. And we talked with Phil Martelli at the Final Four, and his entire life mission is he and Dick Vitale to eradicate cancer. And he said, you know, cancer's a bully. It's a bully. Doesn't care who you are, but it's a bully. It's on the playground and it just wants to beat you down. And it just wants to take your will and destroy things around you and obviously yourself. Stuart Scott, there's going to be a documentary on Stuart Scott that ESPN has just greenlit. And one of the things that Stuart Scott said is, how do you beat cancer and how you live and the way you live? That's how you beat cancer. You don't beat cancer just by surviving and saying, I'm now cancer free. You do that by how you live. And I know it wasn't a surprise, but Slacker passed away today. And I will say that anybody that is in radio in Kansas City or from the Kansas City area that's older than 10 probably knows Slacker, has heard of Slacker, and he passed away. And one of the things that you know about somebody, even if you've never met him, I've never interacted with Slacker, but you feel like you know people, right? You feel like you know somebody. And the ironic nickname, because he worked his ass off, you know, of Slacker. It's like, you know, you call a big guy tiny or a tiny guy. Hey, what's up, big guy? You know, that was Slacker. He had an incredible work ethic. And I would say that not having ever met him or interacted with him, the thing you could say about somebody who lived a good life and was a good person was what people say about him when they pass. And so many people, with the outpouring of sadness about, you know, this person passing away and there being less light in Kansas City today, and someone who slowly was dying but was doing it in a way that still had the humor and the way that he approached life every single day. And if you're in that position, there's nothing wrong if you approach it differently. And maybe there's bitterness, maybe there's other things that are going on. Everybody lives their own life, right? And you can approach things differently. But just the way that he even battled that, And it just sucks. Even when there's not a surprise to it, there's a finality to it. And his wife and daughter don't deserve to continue to go on without their dad and husband. And that's why there's such this continual fight to try to eradicate cancer, because it is just the absolute worst.
Yeah. I knew Slacker fairly well. My mom, for those that don't know, is Tana from Max, Tana, and Moffitt. And they work with Slacker for a long time. So I grew up with Slacker, going to concerts with him. He was always around, and going into the studio with him. And always, he was awesome, man. Slacker was a very, very good guy. I saw him about a year ago, and spirits were high because he had the, they found a donor, right? They found a donor for a bone marrow transplant, and just, it sucks. Didn't take, and but he kept his hard work up until the end. I mean, he was doing his show from his house for a long time on Fox.
God, I'm crying.
And he was just a very, very good guy. And my mom always laughed, and she said the exact same thing you just said was Slacker was a joke because he was the hardest working man in radio. And yeah, it's just, that's a Kansas City icon, a Kansas City radio legend right there. And it's awful.
Yeah. And he was a voice. I mean, he was also a voice for Kansas City, and it just sucks. You know, and it's just in general, cancer sucks. So, as I said, there wasn't going to be an easy transition from that to then talk sports. I didn't want to make it like callous of, okay, we did that, and let's. But it wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have felt right to not acknowledge and talk a little bit. And Mick will be in here at 1 o'clock, and you know, we'll probably talk about it again. Because I don't think there's, I don't think you could talk enough about someone who lived that life like Slacker did. So just sucks for his wife and daughter and everybody that knew him as well. That, you know, so yeah, that's the news today is that Slacker did pass away after a battle with cancer for a while. And I think that that's why I brought up the Stuart Scott thing, because how do you beat cancer? It's how you live, the way in which you live. And I think Slacker sort of, he embodied that throughout his years. So now we transition to talk some baseball and the Royals. And I want to do let's go this route first before we get into the record of the Royals and what they may be you know, over these 19 games after today. So in the next 21 games or whatever, I want to do that in the second segment. But I want to start off with what are, let me call it, buy-in on Royals players right now, like how they're playing, what they look like, how close or how bought in are you on this is the player they are? For instance, Bobby Witt, OPSing at 1,000, you know, batting .314, getting on base at .370. You know, maybe it's not an OPS at 1,000, but Bobby Witt being this type of player, I'm going to go ahead and say 100%. Like, bought in that, you know, my buy-in on Bobby Witt being this player is 100%. Jack?
Yeah, I mean, he would be the most surefire candidate at this point. Yeah. That maybe he's not going to have stretches like he did to begin the year where he's hitting over .500, like doing that for 10 or 15 or 20 games. But I think everybody around the league is talking at this point. I mean, by the end of the year, you're going to be looking at him, if not the MVP winner, as a top three finisher.
Yeah, beyond 100%. Again, 100%, because I hate people that say 110, because I go, well, then it's like the whole Spinal Tap thing, which, again, you've not seen.
I've seen Spinal Tap.
Turn it to 11. Yes. It's like, well, why wouldn't you just make, you know, 10, 11, you know, 11 then? So.
But ours goes to 11.
And what's hilarious, again, just going back to, again, some analytics here, his expected slugging's actually over 1,300, OPSing over 1,300. So he's actually had a little bit unlucky. If you want to even say that about how good Bobby's been, he actually could have had better numbers according to the underlying analytics.
Dylan, you agree 100% bought in that Bobby is this guy? Okay. There's been a little more than a sample size rather than, you know, 16, 17 games. What are they, 11, 16? So 17 games that they played, being 11 and 6. Let's go to Vinny Pasquantino. And this is an interesting one because of how he started versus what he's looked like recently. The batting average is still a little bit low. I mean, he's batting, you know, roughly .250, but he's getting on base at .350. He's OPSing over .800 now. And if you take the entirety of the 15 games that he's played, he would be pacing for 32 home runs and over 100 RBIs, even with the terrible start that he had, because it's such a small sample size. Am I thirsty out there? And he's on pace for, you know, 20 more walks than strikeouts this year. Again, even with the brutal start. But even with that brutal start, he was still walking a decent amount. How bought in are you that this is who Vinny Pasquantino can be, this guy as the three hitter?
I think I'm pretty bought in. I made the bold projection at the beginning of the year. I thought he'd be one of the Royals All-Stars, just because I thought when you looked at the lineup top to bottom, this sounds crazy because Bobby Witt Jr.'s in this lineup, but I think he's the most pure and complete hitter. When you look at hard hit rate, you look at his ability to take a lot of pitches, to walk. He's got the power as well. Now, my opinion has changed a little bit because Bobby Witt Jr. has turned into an MVP candidate, and I can't really say the MVP candidate is not the best pure hitter on the team. But Vinny Pasquantino's package as a hitter is very sustainable, in my opinion. And we knew that from the minor league level. He was always somebody that was going to draw a lot of walks. His WRC plus is already well above league average, and it was at -2 last week. Now it's like 130 something.
He went in like two games, didn't he? Go from -2 to 75?
Yeah, it was that quickly, and that's why I'm bought into what he can do, because what we've seen in the last couple of games, that to me is Vinny Pasquantino when healthy. Now his first 2 years in the league, there was a shoulder injury, and that is still a concern. But right now, he feels like he's as healthy as he's ever been, and when he is healthy. I mean, you're talking about a guy that can hit the ball 110 miles an hour, 430 feet from home plate. And he's not just home run strikeout. He walks a lot. And that's something the Royals have not had for quite some time.
I'm really close to being fully bought in. The only thing that's keeping me from getting from, like, you know, 95% to 100 is I'm not sure that he's a, you know, 32, 35 home run a year guy. I think he's more 22 to 27. And so the pace of home runs that he's now caught up with in the struggles earlier of being a guy that can hit 32 to 35 home runs, I think it's going to be more of the 45 doubles and 25 home runs rather than like 33 and 33, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll go 89% with Vinny. He's a better fielding left-handed bat Billy Butler to an extent. Billy was
better. More power than Billy, though.
A little more power, but I'm with you with the 25 home runs, more of a doubles guy. The average will be less. I think he's going to hover more around the 280-ishes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I need him to get to 299 or better, so I come on for the COUs.
But I think
I probably missed on that one, Jack. Right, I went over 299.
Little bit.
I was a little excited.
But I love, as Jack was alluding to, his process at the plate. Where even if he hits 280, the on-base percentage is going to be above 350. Right now, his whiff rate is phenomenal. 97th percentile, he takes a lot of walks. I love his approach at the plate, which is going to hopefully keep him from those extended periods of ineptitude at the plate.
Yeah. Dylan, where are you at on Vinny? I went 95. Jack went 105%. That was odd.
Just set the dial to 105. We're going there.
He goes to his goes to 105. Gauge. Why don't you just make 95 to 100 more?
Mine
goes to 105. Sterling's at about 89%.
Yeah, I'll go about 95 as well. I think that he's, you know, our first base / DH guy, you know, going forward.
All right, let's look at MJ Melendez. This is going to be an interesting one because he's OPSing almost 900. He's OPSing at 874. He's getting on base at 350. The batting average at 255, I think, is probably right around what I would expect from MJ Melendez. I like that you know, he's walking as often as he is. He's had pop in his bat. Like, he's always been able to barrel the ball up and drive the ball. I mean, he, you know, home runs in the minor leagues was not something that he was long for. Okay, he had home runs. I'm going to say I'm probably 65% bought in that MJ is this guy, and that's mainly because I think the OPS is inflated right now. You know, I haven't done the math of what the OPS would be if it was a ground rule double instead of a home run. It'd be close. I mean, it'd be pretty close, but still. I don't think he's a 900 OPS guy or an 875 OPS guy. If he's an 800, I'll settle out of court right now for that. You know, I'll do that right now. So I'm going to say 65% is where I am on MJ Melendez.
I think I'm right around there as well, because he hasn't put together a season yet at the big league level where he can allude to and go, that's what he really is. We got a second half from last year. Excuse me. But I know it's over there.
You're going to have to look at Sterling. He's like, Sterling, I need the assist. Sterling, cough button.
I didn't even try to see, now, that one.
Now Sterling's just going to mess with you.
Now he's got the power over me.
I have the power.
But I think, and I'm no, you know, hitting coach guru here, but you can really tell when MJ Melendez is going well. When you're taking pitches, you can see some hitters that are scuffling, Mikel Garcia for one. They look fidgety when they're watching pitches, like they're leaning over, they're kind of, you know, their foot's tapping. When MJ Melendez is going right, he knows which pitches are in the zone and which are not. And I think with his swing, the reason I'm like at 60% is because his swing is an opposite field swing. It kind of has that Japanese style to it, where when he's not going well, he's fidgety and he's also pulling everything to the right side. And his swing isn't designed for that. And we saw at the beginning of the year, he was going to all fields. He had the power. His walk rate was near 15 to 20%. He was walking more than anybody in the lineup. And I think if that part of his game, stays consistent, the walking part, not being as fidgety when he's struggling, you are going to see this 250 hitter with an OPS of probably over 700, a WRC plus north of 110, and that's totally fine. And also, his defense is coming around. He's actually tied for third in the league right now in defensive runs saved in left field. It's almost like preparing to be an outfielder instead of a catcher in the offseason might help you a little bit.
How much does the throw from left field in that play help that that particular?
A lot. Helping a lot right now. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, like, you know, but he's better. So that isn't a fluke to where he's played one game and he made that amazing throw. He's played better. I haven't seen him, you know, necessarily misread a ball to where it's like, good God, man, what happened on that one? You know, and those things happen through the course of a season. But he's played a representative left field, and I'm perfectly fine with that, and made that dynamite throw to get him out at home plate. And I'll tell you this, if Salvi would have been injured from that, I would say cut MJ Melendez. because really, that's when you're going to make the throw. Oh, finally make the throw, and it injures Salvi. Way to go, MJ. Oh, you really want to be a catcher,
don't
you?
He wants a catcher spot, but yeah.
There it is. It's the long game he's playing. Sterling, where you at?
67%.
Okay.
67%. I
one upper.
No, one up would have been 66%.
That's true.
It was 67%. Two upper. I like the process of the plate for the most part. He still swings and misses too often. His whiff percentage is not great, but again, he is a guy who has a good understanding of the strike zone. He does hit the ball hard. I think he's going to be very inconsistent throughout his career. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who just, every single week, this is what he's going to do. You're going to see a couple week stretches where he looks incredible and a couple week stretches where you go, wow, should he get sent to the minors?
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to get better defensively, as we've seen. Again, the range going from the second percentile to now this year, the 30th. We talked with Les Norman about that. And Jack, again, it does help when you're not training to be a catcher and actually as an outfielder. So, again, I think he can be a decent leadoff hitter, which I know in today's baseball, not traditional baseball, but because he does take so many walks.
And he's got experience with it. It's not like he's never done it before. I mean, they had him at the leadoff spot a number of games.
And he's faster than people realize.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize because he doesn't steal a lot of bases. He's a very good base runner, but doesn't steal a lot of bases. He's not going to slow you down. If he gets on all of a sudden Bobby's second, there's not going to be this necessarily a log jam on the base paths.
Although it is odd how he runs, it always feels like his waist and legs, his bottom part of the torso, is like 2 feet behind him when he runs. You ever notice that when he's running, it's like how is this torso like already at the base and his legs are still halfway down
there? It's a race though. It's like a 5K. He's trying to really get the ribbon. He's trying to run through the ribbon.
Yes, it's so. And I know he's got a decent size backside. And maybe that's why, but he does run. Like, why is that still 2 feet back there? Whatever, Dylan. Yeah, I don't care. Mark it. Mark it all you want. I don't care. I said it. Yeah, I said it. He's got a great ass. Go ahead, Dylan. Where are you at on MJ Melendez?
Mark that.
Besides that.
I'd say 75%.
I wanted you just to go 68%, just to top. You're even more confident on that.
I think he can be the, you know, bottom three guy in the lineup.
Like now you're talking about bottoms.
Well, now you are, actually. So I'll mark
Jack,
that.
Your turn.
I'm staying out of this. I will not be the fourth one to join.
Don't be the horse's ass here, okay? Come on. Join in. Let's go. Let's do a couple more on offense, and I'm going to get to some pitchers. Nelson Velasquez. And for those that, you know, here are his numbers. He's batting .296. He's getting on base at .360. He's OPSing at .819. He hasn't had an extra base hit in a while. He's got 5 extra base hits, the 2 home runs. He's gone the opposite field a little bit. So I guess there's a couple of ways of looking at it. Like, where's my confidence in him being a 300 hitter? About 10%. Where's my confidence of him being a guy that can have 5 extra base hits in 15 games? Okay, that's pretty high. I think he can be that guy and run into some. But the close to 50% whiff rate scares the bleep out of me of Velasquez if he doesn't figure that out, of being a guy that can, you know, see the batting average plummet along with the on-base percentage plummet as well. So I'm probably at a 55% because of what he did last year. I think there is some carryover of, like, it's not just, you know, we saw it in spring training or something. Where are you at, Jack?
I think it could go either way. I think I am legitimately at 50% because, again, he's never been an everyday player before. And right now he's stepping into that role for the first time. And let me be clear. an everyday player in meaningful games right now. Last year when he came in, the Royals were 40 games under 500. I mean, it didn't really matter if he did good or bad. I mean, for the sake of his job, yes, it did matter. But for the team aspect, it was like, oh, this is really cool to see. But the Royals are 30 and 81 or whatever the hell it was. For this specific start, I was worried the most about the beginning. The way he looked in spring training, he didn't get a ton of winter ball experience. And he was striking out a lot in spring training. I thought that is going to be a big issue for him because last year he hit the bleep out of fastballs and couldn't touch the breaking ball. I mean, now this year you're seeing him spit on those a little bit more. He's laying off those and close pitches. But I just don't know if I'll ever see the whiff rate come down. I think he is legitimately home run, walk, strikeout, which for a DH is not a bad thing. Mm. I mean, if his OBP by the end of the year is 340, 350, and he's popped 25 home runs, sign me up right now.
Absolutely.
I think I'm 49%, just under 50, because he has to hit. He's a DH. He's playing some outfield right now, but he's not a great outfielder. He's not particularly fast, doesn't have good range, doesn't have a great arm, and he whiffs way too much, which, again, you're going to see some stretches where, similar to MJ, but MJ, I still like his process better. You're going to see some stretches of Nelson that we're seeing right now where you go, oh, man, what is he? He looks lost at the plate. I liked him going to right field earlier on in the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's trying too hard right now to go to right, but it's not working. Whatever he's doing, again, the overall numbers look good because he got up to such a torrid start, but I'm probably just under 50% because there's no defense to back him up to keep him in the game.
Dylan?
Yeah, I'll go 50-50, actually. Nice. I just, right on the center. Okay. I don't think of him as our power slugger hitter. Like, that's why I said Vinny feels more like the team's DH, even though he's our first baseman. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of feels like he might not be here for the long, play, I guess.
The last one on the offense, and then we'll take a break and we'll do some pitchers and we'll get into the record of what we think after these 19 games.
You want to talk about if he's a dump truck or not? You don't want to just talk about that?
Not much.
Okay.
You know, MJ's a little different. MJ's in a category
all
by himself.
He's built different, you're saying?
MJ's in a category all by himself, you know.
Okay.
Michael Garcia. Now, one of the things I was going to ask on the air and sort of produce live is, how do we want to approach this? Is 70% that we believe this is who he is now moving forward in a negative light? Or 70% I'm confident that this is not who he is? Because my first thought was, okay, Michael Garcia is this guy, 30%. Because I think he's better than this, right? I mean, so almost like the lower percentage would be that I believe more in Mike. Let's go that way, since that's the way we're approaching it with the other guys.
You could use career stats because, unless you're saying you just
I'm talking
use
about this year, what we're seeing from Michael Garcia right now, being this guy, because you've talked about MJ being placed in the leadoff spot.
Yeah.
And that would be maybe a lack of confidence in Garcia, maybe turning it around. I'm sitting about 25-30% of this being Garcia. I think he's better than what we've seen. I do worry if there's an early, I'm driving the ball, I'm hitting home runs, now I'm really implementing launch angle here a little bit more because it's clearly working, and now look what I'm doing. And I have a game where I've got multiple extra base hits in a game, and I never had that last year. And he hasn't had an extra base hit since that game when he had multiple extra base hits in a game. So I'm sitting 25, I'll go 30% in a way that I'm more confident in what he is. But I also think there's a, essentially 1 in 3 chance that this is the guy that he sort of regresses to the mean of this year rather than being a guy as a leadoff hitter that was doing some of those things we saw. And boy, he can now take a step forward this year.
I think I'm at a big goose egg, 0%. I don't think this is anything for what he's like. Whatever virus Vinny Pasquantino had in the slump to begin the year feels very comparable to what this is. And what we saw with Vinny to begin the year, he was always down on the count. It was always 1-2, 0-2, and they were feeding him good pitches, and he was kind of trying to see more pitches at that point in time, and then you're down in the count, you look up at the Jumbotron, you're hitting, a 110, and it's like, this is looking pretty ugly. This is a confidence thing for me. I don't think it's more so the launch angle. He's trying to hit home runs. I know Rex Hudler said that, oh, he needs to get back to driving the ball. I think that what will make Michael Garcia go from a really good player to a great player is that he already hits the ball tremendously hard. I think that what we're seeing right now is a little bit of pressing. He's a young hitter, But he's at the leadoff spot, and I think in his mind he's going, I got to see pitches, right? Where when he's seen at his best, he's ambushing, right? It's first pitch fastball, boom, 108 back up the middle. And now it's, I'm watching that. And then it's, oh, I'm swinging at the curveball that's in the zone, but it's not really a hittable pitch. Then it's 0-2, and I might look at something that's right on the corner. I think he's had 11 called third strikes that aren't strikes on him. So maybe that's a factor of, man, I mean, everything is going against me at that point. He also was near the tops in the league last year of having called third strikes that were not strikes in the end. So I think what we saw with Vinny is kind of happening with Mikel. You go and look at his Baseball Savant page, Sterling, I'm sure you have it up. There's still a lot of red.
I'm sure Sterling has it up.
It still has a lot of red in there. Yeah. And that's,
you call him nerd, fellas?
No, dork.
Thank you. He's a buck 70 right now. I think with a young hitter, he needs a two-hit game. He needs what happened to Vinny in game one of that Houston series, or game two, where you just have that bleeder, that bloop to the right side. It's, now that 0 for 16 is in the rearview mirror, now I can go back to, I feel good. The average goes from 172 to 182. And then hopefully after this doubleheader, maybe he goes 5 for 9, and he's hitting like 220, and it's, okay, we're not even worried about this anymore.
Yeah, Crash Davis, what was it? One little bleeder, one seeing eye single, one ground ball with eyes, one Texas leaguer. One of those a week, and you go from a 250 hitter to a 300 hitter.
Yep.
That's all you need. Sterling, where you at?
23%.
Okay.
So that means, again, I'm more with both of you guys that this is not who he is, but there's still a part of me that thinks, that's great and all. His OPS last year was 681. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's OPSing 740, 750 and above. You can get him to league average. That's great with his defense. The issue is he's playing a position third base where you want a little more offense.
Yeah.
I don't know where he fits in the Royals picture long term, and that's the issue because Bobby Witt Jr. is clearly the shortstop. He defensively, he's phenomenal now. Is Michael Garcia a second baseman of the future? Well, they keep moving other pieces at second base. Yeah. I have a little bit of trouble trying to find 3 years from now, where is Michael Garcia? Not necessarily a knock against him personally. It's just the way he's third base. It's the team construction, the roster construction. I love all the hard hit numbers. That's all great and all. The defense is there. The speed is, for the most part, there. I just don't think he's a leadoff hitter at all. I think he's, if he's your seventh hitter, I think you're looking pretty darn good. But do you want your third baseman batting seventh? Again, maybe that's just the traditional baseball guy in me thinking that with third base, but that's more or less where I lie.
We'll come back. We'll get into a few pitchers, and then we'll look at the record, what we think they'll be in those 19 games. There is some breaking news in the sports world, in the NBA world, and a local connection to a degree. The NBA, this is from Joe Pompliano, the NBA has handed down Jontay Porter a lifetime ban for violating the league's gambling rules. The NBA says he, quote, disclosed confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes. Joe Pompliano then says the NBA had no other choice. Those were the two games that we talked about when the story started coming out, the two games in which the prop bets were heavily, heavily betted, heavily bet. And apparently the NBA and gamblers, not vetted, but heavily bet that the under would hit on three-point attempts and another thing in another game. And both games, he ended up leaving the game early because of a re-aggravation of an eye injury, played like 4 minutes in that game, and another one to where there was unusual activity on the under for Jontay Porter that night. And they have found out that he participated in that for gambling purposes. They at least have evidence that there was some connection with all of the gamblers putting money on that and him knowing that and participating in that. Yeah, you're done. I mean, that's just dumb. That's just dumb. It's absurd. There's no way you would be able to get enough money from that and not be caught to make up for the earning potential of playing in the NBA for the next 5 or 6 years, even on two-way contracts or getting opportunities there. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Continue rolling. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels heading up until 2 o'clock. Dylan had a great point in the break about Jontay Porter. It's a really good point, Dylan.
Just get an interpreter.
That's the smartest way to do it. Smartest way to do it is get a middleman somewhere. As Chris Carter would say, you got to have a fall guy. Find a fall guy.
The issue is you might get a fall guy for Shohei. I don't know who's falling for Jontay.
Yeah, but Jontay Porter was running his own like DraftKings accounts and his own Discord. Like he
you
was
got
running
to have a ball guy.
Thank you, Chris Carter. He was running his own Discord with gambling advice and like at some point you're like, you know, just you're just asking to be caught. You just like.
You think anybody told him? Maybe not the best idea. Maybe have the fall guy.
I mean, somebody had to have told him, right? Like they have all these, you know, rookie symposiums and especially
you got
with
to have
the
a fall guy.
That was at a rookie symposium, by the way. So, literally, Chris Carter was telling that rookie class
you
about
have a fall guy
being smart of who's in your group. Rashee Rice, you weren't driving the car.
You got to have a fall guy.
Frank Clark, what's in the back of your car?
You got to have a fall guy.
Not mine. Was not mine. Jonte, were you gambling on this?
You got to have a fall guy.
No, it's my friend Ponte Jorder.
Mustache and everything.
He's got the Groucho Marx mask on. It wasn't me, Shay. I swear to you, it wasn't me, Copper. No.
You got to have a fall guy.
It was a fall guy, Shay. It was him.
You got to have a fall guy.
You'll never take me alive. All right. let's get into the Royals. Back into the Royals. Let's talk some pitching here. Cole Reagans, I'm 100% that he can be this guy. I mean, I don't care. 1.93 ERA, 2.93 ERA, 2.5, whatever. But, like, this guy that can go out every 5 days and put up zeros and get strikeouts and be the lead of a starting staff and be a legit guy that can be up as a number one, 100%. Jack?
His bad starts will look like what the Houston one did. Five innings, three runs, 10 hits. It's never going to – it could. Baseball's random, but I doubt it's ever going to spiral where you'll see three innings, eight runs. I think in his Royals career, only one time has he allowed more than 4 runs in an outing. So, and in that outing, he went six innings. So
he wasn't ran in the second inning.
He wasn't.
Wasn't Hunter Brown the other day.
Nope.
Sterling?
Talent-wise, 100%. My actual, if you want to include injury, I'll say 90% because I think there's at least a 10% injury chance with the guy who's had multiple Tommy Johns. And again, whose most innings pitched in his career has been, what, 96 was last year the most with 96?
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern.
So
for sure, yeah.
I'll go 90% for that reason.
Yeah. Dylan?
I agree with Sterling, actually. Perfect answer.
How about that? Is that the first ever I agree with Sterling on this
first?
Show?
It's copying not even the show, homework. Just life.
Just in life. Yeah.
In life.
I agree with Sterling.
can you mark that, Dylan, and just make me a ringtone or something out of that?
Brady Singer is an interesting one because we saw him take the Singer step in 2022 or just take a step forward that then we were wondering if somebody else would take that Brady Singer step. So I guess we can't call it the Singer step when he's the one that did it. But whatever. He took that step forward in 22. Last year was a step back. Was it all the World Baseball Classic? All of that. He's looked dynamite so far this year. And he goes again today against the White Sox. And yes, I'm on the over 5.5 strikeouts at plus 116. Jonte Porter also is on the – I read Jonte Porter's Discord. he said take the under of 4 threes for Steph last night. And the over 5.5 strikeouts for Brady Singer today. So he's 1-for-1 so far. 0.98, sub 1 ERA. No, obviously not. But 18 Ks, 4 walks, throwing in the 4-seamer. I'm gonna be, last year concerns me a little bit. And even when he was having, his good, stretch, there would be some starts in there where he would sort of struggle with command. I'm going to go, I'm sitting at 82%. For Brady Singer being close to this guy.
Are you taking some of my numbers now? You're taking my thought process?
82.4. Where are you at, Sterling?
I'm actually at 84%.
Okay. 84.2? I went 82.4. 84%
because that's a slider speed. I'm going, and he's throwing the slider 47% of the time.
I like it, yeah.
So I'm going with that.
I'm only going to go like 62%
now. Okay.
Here's why.
No, I want to
hear. In his two starts, the offense has given him an absurd cushion, right? So, really, he's only had to pitch with pressure for, like, the first two innings of each start. In fact, the one he had last time out, they scored 9 in the first. So, one
that's
inning,
yeah.
He got out of it, and then you're pitching with a 9-run cushion. So, today, it is the White Sox, so that's another one I can't really read too much into. The good thing is, after that Singer step, as you talked about in 2022, we all went into 23 going, he's the ace. He's the workhorse. He's the Kevin Apier that can give you 200 innings. Now he's the 4-starter. If he gives you a 4.1 ERA and he strikes out eight guys per nine, walks less than three, his whip's around league average, I'm not going to complain. Like, if he gives you anything sub four ERA-wise, and that's your four starter, sign me up right now. But the 60% part is that's where I'm at for 2022 Singer. If 2022 Singer returns, they'll have a top five rotation in baseball, and it won't be deniable.
Go ahead, Sterling. You want to give a little bit more of your 84%?
A little more than 84 is, it's not necessarily the strikeouts, which have been phenomenal so far, and that comes with the slider. It comes with throwing his four-seam fastball now 19% of the time. He's in the changeup only 4% of the time, but still having at least a little bit of a wrinkle. He throws that four-seamer almost primarily against lefties, which helps him get lefties out with the slider breaking away, sinker breaking in on the hands of a righty. He gets a lot of ground balls. Just a lot of weak contact. I don't care about the strikeouts with him as much as other pitchers because he doesn't throw the ball hard. 92 miles per hour, which I know 10 years ago, he's a flamethrower. Right now, it's 20th percentile. But the fact is, 96th percentile in ground ball rate. And that happens when you have a hard sinker with a good slider, with the ability to occasionally throw in a changeup. It doesn't walk a lot of guys, so that doesn't mean a lot of guys on the base pass where you can give up a two-run, three-run shot. So I think he's more 2022 than 2023 for sure. I'm with Jack. If you get under four, that's all you're really hoping for. But I think I'm in the camp that you'll see him around a 3.75 this year. I think that's about where I'm going to place my bets.
Sign me up right now. Dylan?
I'm going to go 70 right in the middle for both reasons. I think they both made amazing points. I also think
they were okay.
They were okay. Okay. Right.
They were fine.
He's really hyping me up today. I like this Dylan.
I mean, I'm your corner guy. I'm over here.
He's
just
a cut man.
There
I'm over here cutting you, and he's there. Yeah. You're fine, champ. You're fine.
I just think he's almost there. I think the sinker is a massive addition. I think he also has the chance to be our staff's kind of like fiery starter that's always kind of the motivator as well, because he was at Florida. He was very, very energetic.
And he literally yelled at clouds.
Correct.
At Florida.
Batters and everything.
Yes.
So we haven't seen that Brady Singer yet, and I feel like he has a chance to kind of be that for the Royals.
All right, last one, James MacArthur. So he's got a 4.15 ERA. I'm pretty optimistic that he can be at least a 4.15 ERA. 8 2/3 innings, 11 Ks, one walk. He's not a guy that's had a lot of walks in his career, so it's not somebody that's been, that guy. He is a guy that gets a lot of strikeouts, and he is a guy that has some really awesome stuff. Maybe not, 11 per nine, but he's got some good stuff. I'm gonna go 65%, and the reason I'm going a little bit lower is I want to see what happens when people really get the book on MacArthur and stop chasing as much. And what is he, 96th percentile of chase percentage? When maybe some other guys are sitting in there going, yeah, I'm going to make you prove that you're throwing strikes. You've got the command and you guys are swinging over the top and your stuff is moving left to right, right to left, north, south. But guys are whiffing and chasing at almost the same rate. So I'm not going to do that. So I do wonder whether it's the ERA dropping, but also the strikeout to walk ratio, does that start to even out? So I think the stuff is there, but I'll go 62% right now.
I'm going to go around 80%.
Ooh, wow.
So I really
love
do
it.
Think that
you
his
do
stuff,
love your MacArthur.
I do love James General MacArthur.
Yes,
that.
Okay.
So we can make
that
a new nickname. Hopefully he gets an intro video now since he's taking over the closer's role from Will Smith. But I think his stuff plays right now. He's actually added a little bit of a uptick in velocity in all of his pitches except for the cutter, I think it is. The horizontal movement, it's got like 18 inches on the curveball. I think it's around 14 for his sinker, which is you saw a couple times. And that thing darts kind of like when Brady Singer was at his prime, that thing would just start at you and then go right over the middle of the plate. There was actually a cool story I heard from a buddy of mine who played minor league ball when James MacArthur was still in the minor leagues. And this guy said it was widely known around the league James MacArthur had the most unhittable curveball. Nobody could hit it. And when you faced him, you just hoped to God you weren't down in the count because the curveball was coming. And that's what the Royals saw. When I was actually down there in surprise and asked about James MacArthur, they were like, that pickup was strictly analytical. They looked at his numbers. His ERA was north of 7. He was 26 years old in AAA. And they were like, nope, look at this guy's curveball. It's going to play. He's a back-end guy. And he gave up 7 runs in his first outing with the Royals. It was a terrible debut. And it's like, what the hell did they see in him? And then September, I think he had one base runner in September, like 18 straight scoreless outings. And now we're seeing, how quickly Q went to him in the closer's role. It's because I think all along it was like, Will Smith can be the guy, but the minute he can't, We have our guy.
We're going to MacArthur.
What percentage were you?
He was at 82.
I'm at 80. Yeah, roughly 80, 82.
I'll do 81 then, because you're General MacArthur's biggest supporter. I'll be your second in command.
It's okay. Good play on words.
Yeah, because I'm a fan. Again, 3 walks in 32 career innings. So even while the chase percentage is, again, phenomenal, the whiff percentage is outstanding, he's never going to be a guy that walks a lot of guys. Like, that's just based on the career he's had so far. He wasn't getting a lot of necessarily, like last year, right? People could have been waiting for him to throw strikes. They weren't, because he was throwing strikes. If you wait, he's just going to fill the strike zone up. And again, the 95-mile-an-hour sinker, the curveball, then he has a slider/cutter. They have it classified, at least on Savant, as a slider. But you don't know. With those three pitches, 41% curve, 30% sinker, 26% slider-cutter combo. You have no idea what's coming. He can throw all three for strikes. So while it's not 100, you talked about the movement. I like what he brings. He's 6'7 with a nice extension. I mean, it plays up. I'm with you. You're 82, I'll be 81.
I'm gonna go 62, and I hope I'm wrong on that. Dylan?
I'll go 80.
Wow, okay. I'm clearly in the minority. Here we go.
I'll go 80 and a half. Here we go. I'm the lieutenant.
I am the opposition. I'm the one that's on the other side of the trench. even though I'm, 60%, I'm only 20% away from you guys. But, I hope it's more 82, 84, 80.5.
You're like platoon. You know, we're on the same team. You might just be a little, who knows? You might be a Tom Berenger.
So... Jack is Sergeant Major of the Army. I'm Command Sergeant Major, and then you're Sergeant Major. Is that how that works? Did I get it right?
In my lack of faith, I'll be in the Navy, and I'll just be the seaman.
Who am I in Band of Brothers? Which actor is that?
That would be... Who's the one that... I'm clearly Matt Damon. I'm the one that they got to go and save, and everybody's putting their life at risk just to get my ass home. We got to save this freaking guy. Hold on. And I don't care if I've got to go and say, I don't care if my entire reason is going and finding this guy, whatever it takes, so I go home. Right? Was that the Tom Hanks, essentially, something like that? Of course, that was Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. I know it's different than Band of Brothers. I get that, but,
We can go Saving Private Ryan with this.
That's fine. Yeah. Or Band of Brothers.
Or Pacific.
We few, we happy few. We Band of Brothers, because he that sheds his blood with me today shall be my brother. We'll take a timeout, and we will talk about the Royals record when Jack's back in on Friday. Because they won't have played any of these games yet, and we don't have time in the next segment either. We'll take a timeout. More so next. All right, wrapping up this hour. We'll talk with Ryan Tracy coming up on the other side of the break. RGR Football, Locked On Chiefs podcast. We'll get his thoughts on some draft discussion topics. I do like how the bottom line of ESPN, so, Justin Jefferson and the contract is, just as T. Higgins and the Bengals, going through those things. But the bottom line scroll on ESPN talks about Justin Jefferson not showing up to phase one of the first day. And it writes, it reads, Justin Jefferson has not shown up to day one of the Vikings. Voluntary, in all caps, voluntary. He hasn't shown up. No need to panic, everybody. Just so you know, it's voluntary in all caps there. That was an interesting way of passing that information along.